This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guest this morning is David Batker, Chief Economist and Executive Director of Earth Economics, a nonprofit located in Tacoma, Washington, that applies a whole systems economic analysis to benefit both human economies and natural ecosystems. David also is co-author with John DeGraff of the book What's the Economy For Anyway? And you heard from him about the book last year in a sustainability segment interview. David Batker is here today to tell us how valuation of ecosystem services can promote policy decisions that lead to a more sustainable future. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you, Diane. I'm happy to be here.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about Earth Economics?
Yes, Earth Economics is a nonprofit. We're based in Tacoma. We've been here about 12 years. And we look at the natural systems and benefits that nature provides and the economic benefits of that provisioning. And it's been very exciting. We're sort of doing a little international work, some national work, and then, of course, a focus here in the Northwest in the Puget Sound Basin.
Would you briefly remind us of the difference between ecological economics and traditional economics?
Yes, I'd say ecological economics sort of says the big picture are these natural systems that house our economies. And so we need to get that scale right. We don't want the natural systems to be falling apart because then we can't maintain our economies. And so I'd say that sort of scale issue is probably the primary differentiating factor. In traditional economics, we sort of think of the resource sector as a small thing, you know, like 2% of the GDP, when in fact, our economies are housed within this landscape.
What are ecosystem services?
Ecosystem services are the benefits we receive from nature. So you can think about goods, things you could drop on your toe, like water, fish, pharmaceuticals, ornamental goods and such, food and fiber. Those are goods. And then services are things that you can't drop on your toe, like flood protection, drinking water filtration, aesthetic value, recreational value. And these are all benefits we get from natural systems.
What is the state of ecosystem services worldwide at present?
Well, that's a great question. You know, if we were in the 30s, we'd say, hey, we've got plenty of wilderness. We don't have to worry about the climate. It seems to be doing fine. We're not messing it up. Drinking water, huge aquifers, you know, unpolluted and such. Well, now we've progressed 80 years or so, and we've got a lot more roads. We've got a lot more built capital. But our natural capital is far worse off, whether it's drinking water or climate or biodiversity, oil resources, etc. Our natural capital has been in decline, and that's why it's of more value now and more important that we track that value and pay attention and, in fact, invest in things like restoration.
Would you say more about why you should put a value on ecosystem services? What is the goal?
Well, good question. You know, markets don't work well if you don't count all the costs and benefits. And so it's important to value the benefits of nature. Otherwise, we make bad decisions. For instance, we have an aquifer that provides vast amounts of water for free. We pollute it. Well, now we have to buy bottled water, which is 1,000 times more expensive and less reliable, etc. So we don't want to make those sorts of mistakes. Now, there are folks on the environmental side who actually object to putting a value on natural systems. They're worried that it has unmeasurable intrinsic value. But think about this. A human life also is immeasurable in value. No question. You can't put a dollar to a person's life. On the other hand, we pay people for the work they do. And we should recognize nature's work. If we don't recognize the flood protection value of wetlands and forests, we may lose those wetlands and forests and, in fact, end up flooding our highest and best value industrial areas as well. So valuing ecosystem services is important just as valuing people's work is important. We're looking at the work that nature does and contributes to the economy.
Would you say just a few words about the methodology you use to put a value on ecosystem services?
Yes, this is a very new field, and we use more or less, I'd say, an appraisal value. So you think about every house or business, whether it's sold, you do an appraisal. You kind of estimate based on other houses around the area what the value is. So to do a study on ecosystem services, for instance, in the Green River Valley, to look at flood protection, drinking water values, recreation, aesthetic value and all, we would have to conduct about 140 independent studies to get the full value or at least a fuller value of nature. Well, we don't have 140 studies in the Green River Valley. So we take the studies that are there, and then we look at, you know, what about Snohomish? Do we have some studies there that are close by or others? And that gives us sort of an estimate. And the way we go about it at Earth Economics is we look at the lowest values in the peer-reviewed academic journals, just like a house appraiser would go out and say, well, here are kind of the low range for this house. And then we look at the higher ranges for those values. And that gives us at least a boundary of the benefits provided. And it gives decision makers a pretty good idea. At least they can use the low value and say, we know we're getting at least this much flood protection out of these forests and wetlands. So that's the methodology that we use. But this is based on 8 different methodologies. Like, depending on the ecosystem service, you'd use a different valuation methodology. For instance, in Seattle, we get our water from the Cedar River watershed. And if we replace that with a filtration plant, it would cost about $200 million. So we know that the value of water filtration of the Cedar River Forest watershed there is about $200 million, just capital asset value. That's replacement value. For recreation, that doesn't work. You use a travel cost method. So there are different methods for estimating value. 30 years ago, we didn't have that much idea, I'd say, about these values. Now we've got good methodologies for valuing ecosystem services.
Well, you said that this is a new field. How accepted is it by the traditional economists?
Well, again, I think if it was 30 years ago or 15 years ago, a lot of people would look askew at it. But today, it's widely accepted. These valuations are published in the grandest of economic journals, and basically it's accepted just like a house appraisal.
What is a specific example of how taking ecosystem services into account has altered planning decisions that would help lead to a more sustainable outcome?
Great question. In 2004, we worked with Seattle Public Utilities, and they had a proposal on the Tolt River, a levee setback, so to move the levee back. This is about a $5 million project. Now, if you look at that for, say, salmon restoration was one important goal, but you also get flood protection. You also get improvements in water quality and habitat. And so if you only look at that project for salmon restoration only, you'd have a hard time justifying it. If you only looked at it just as a flood protection project, well, it might not make sense. But when you take the whole suite of benefits together, all of a sudden, it looks like a very good project. And what we found is when you look at 5 to 12 ecosystem services, a lot of these restoration investments actually pay off $6 to the $1 invested. And in fact, the Tolt River setback has been a very successful project for salmon restoration, and it has opened the floodplain to help reduce flooding. If we had further projects widening the floodplain further up, you'd have really long-term benefits and much larger benefits for flood protection.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is David Batker, Chief Economist and Executive Director of Earth Economics. Our topic is how valuation of ecosystem services can promote policy decisions that lead to a more sustainable future. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Would you give some more examples of how evaluation of ecosystem services has been used in the Northwest?
Sure. Right here in the Green River Valley, we looked at valuing the ecosystem services of the entire basin. It came to about somewhere around $135 billion. It's about twice the value of all the built capital. That may seem surprising, but in fact, if you look at what would happen if we shaved off all the trees, you know, Boeing would be flooded out, the port would be wiped out. And of course, our drinking water is that basis. In that case, we also looked at salmon restoration, and there's about $75 million of projects where there's a really good overlap between flood protection and salmon restoration. And another project that we looked at was the North Winds Weir, and that's a levee setback also, and it was turned into a park as well. So you got recreation benefits out of it as well. It had hazardous waste on it that was cleaned up. So you took an area that was actually dangerous for people and for salmon. It's right in the pipe of the river and the transition zone. So this is where juvenile salmon come in. They have to have 2 weeks to get used to that salt water. And as it was, they were just being slammed right into salt water and about 85% mortality. Whereas now that you've got that opened area there, those juvenile salmon have their time. You also do provide some amount of flood protection, and you've got recreation. And so this suite of benefits, you know, initially this project was criticized by some. They said, you know, what are we paying, $2,000 per salmon? And then when we said, well, there's a whole other suite of benefits you're getting, then it was unanimously adopted. And you had all these folks saying, you know, we need a lot more projects like this where we get a lot of benefits. And I just wanted to say this kind of fed into, there's Raya 9, that's the Green River Watershed, and they have a steering committee there in a group with all the made up of the cities, the county, citizen groups, etc. And they found themselves kind of consistently coming to unanimity all of a sudden when they started considering the full suite of benefits provided by these projects. And Raya 9 has kind of led the way in the state for saying, what we'd like to do also is look at how investments in stormwater, levees, salmon restoration, water quality can kind of be put together. So think about, this is one of the problems of the 20th century, which I think ecosystem services solve. In Raya 9, you have 16 cities building all separate stormwater systems. Often it's a pipe into the river. More and more it's not, setting things aside. Then we have a flood district saying, gee, we're getting more water in the river every year. We're getting higher flooding. You know, we need to build levees higher. And I think the flood district, everybody is starting to realize that if the flood district, for example, could pay a marginal difference on a stormwater system so you have more infiltration, then you have more cold water for salmon during the low flow period. That's good. You have more drinking water because your groundwater is recharged. You have less stormwater problems. You have less flooding. And you also have less demolition of this infrastructure we've built. So when a flood hits, you know, it harms levees, demolishes levees sometimes. We have to rebuild them. If you take that pressure off by infiltrating that stormwater, then you're going to have less harsh peak flows. So instead of having one problem, one infrastructure, and building 10, you know, whether it's stormwater levees and then a salmon project all separately and having one destroy the other, we can do this in concert. And ecosystem services, this approach, is a systems approach. So we can solve a bunch of problems at once, get greater value for all these services for a lot less cost.
Overall, are there certain types of projects that are most likely to incorporate evaluation of ecosystem services? What are the most promising types of projects?
Right now, things in floodplains, because we have a great deal of understanding. We've also done a lot of work in Louisiana on the Mississippi Delta. And until Hurricane Katrina, the Army Corps did not recognize the value of wetlands for hurricane buffering. Well, after the storm surge was measured, so you could see, Hurricane Rita went right down the coast, and students came out from Louisiana State University and from New Orleans University to actually measure the storm surge, so the height of the debris line. So where you had wetlands, the debris line was lower. Where you had a barrier island, the debris line is lower. Where it's open water, the debris line was really high, and it showed high impact on the levees. And so now it's made a very big difference for investments. The Army Corps has set aside $500 million for big diversion to open up an area and renew the wetlands. So we realize that if we don't build the wetlands out, then we can't stop hurricanes. Here in the Northwest, we also have these huge rainstorms. We have very steep watersheds all throughout the Puget Sound Basin, right down the Washington State coast, very steep watersheds. So we need to look at forests not only for their timber value, but for their flood protection value, for their slowing of the peak flow of these floods, for soil types, for recharging groundwater. So we want to keep soils in good shape where we're recharging the groundwater. It can accept a lot of water. And anyway, I think there's a great deal of promise for use of ecosystem services for land use planning and for looking at flood reduction.
Are there other types of projects where evaluation of ecosystem services has proved valuable?
There are quite a few. In fact, we're doing a number of things. We're looking at parks. Right now, in the news, the state parks, you know, are having to lay people off. Last year, basically, the entire budget was cut for state parks, but we worked to show that parks provide a variety of services and a lot of jobs. And so the Discovery Pass was created by the state legislature. There's still some refinement. It needs to raise more money. So that's one area. We've also looked at the built infrastructure and urban ecosystem services. So if one philosophy is to go through and we're going to pave the city and put all that stormwater into stormwater pipes, pay to kind of move it all around, or we're going to have green building philosophy, which says let's have more of that stormwater infiltrate, and that's good for salmon because actually it keeps the low flow period up, renews our aquifers. And in our building structures, we can emphasize a little bit more about green ecosystem services as well. And we're just coming out with a report on the built infrastructure and ecosystem services.
To what extent do you run into skepticism about use of valuing ecosystem services?
Well, that's a great question, Diane. And I'd say wherever we go, initially, there is certainly a good number of people who are quite skeptical. And, you know, working in Louisiana, it's not exactly your mossy green crowd. But as soon as we start saying, well, here's the science behind why wetlands provide hurricane buffering, or in the same here in the Northwest, our critics, once they go, oh, yeah, that's exactly how forests, their physical measurements, then their economic analyses on how those physical benefits provide economic benefits, it's pretty clear cut. So it takes a little while, but virtually everyone is brought around. And it doesn't matter whether you're out of the Tea Party or, you know, out in the Green Party, really. It takes time. Another point is that natural capital that provides ecosystem services appreciates in value. We don't have to pay for a lot of maintenance. Like Seattle Public Utilities, it's astounding the efficiency. You think about providing our water through that watershed. They have done a tremendous job. And if we had built a filtration plant in the early 1900s, we would have had to build four of them by now, and we'd have to build another one soon, you know? On the other hand, as the forest has matured, it's doing a better job at filtration. And we still need investments. We need to remove roads. We need to do things like that. But I think that once people realize, oh, you can have nature kind of do it for free and potentially in perpetuity if you have a little restoration budget and you do your work there, or you can have built capital that falls apart and you have to rebuild it again, kind of an easy choice. Where natural capital can provide these functions, we want to use it.
How widespread is valuation of ecosystem services at present?
It's catching on very quickly. We were one of the very first groups to start doing this work, and we've made a very big effort to train consulting companies, to work with governments and others. So it's still a very new field, and there's a lot of debate about how you define particular ecosystem services, how you differentiate them, and economic methods. But, you know, that same debate exists for valuing corporations or valuing other assets as well. So it's becoming more widespread, but it's still kind of a small community.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is David Badker, Chief Economist and Executive Director of Earth Economics. Our topic is how valuation of ecosystem services can promote policy decisions that lead to a more sustainable future. Would you like to speak about the use of valuing ecosystem services at the federal level?
Yes, thank you. Things are changing there. If you think about it, economics is really about how we allocate resources and how we decide to do things. And since the 1950s, we've used what's called cost-benefit analysis. The federal government requires it, whether it's a road or education project, etc. So does our state. So does Seattle Public Utilities, government institutions. Private companies use sort of a calculation of rate of return on their investment, ROI or other things. These analyses are very important because they decide whether you go forward with an investment or a project or not. Now, there's a set of rules for cost-benefit analysis, and it's governed overall by what we call principles and guidelines, which was last laid out in 1983, a little bit obsolete now. So the principles and guidelines for cost-benefit analysis, which again cover all federal, state, local cost-benefit analyses, don't include many of the benefits of nature. So unfortunately, that's one reason why the Army Corps of Engineers has not counted the flood protection benefits of wetlands and forests as part of their infrastructure. And stormwater utilities also have often not counted the value of soils and forests and wetlands for stormwater. So right now, President Obama has given an instruction to the Council on Environmental Quality to rewrite this principles and guidelines. It's a very important decision, and I think it's a very good decision. And so we gave a presentation by phone to the Council for Environmental Quality to say, here are the things we think should be added to the cost-benefit analysis and criteria. And that was exciting. But a second part of the presentation we gave was not only here's how you can improve cost-benefit analysis, but what are some tools with ecosystem services that go beyond and could do a far better job than cost-benefit analysis? Earth Economics received a National Science Foundation grant a few years ago to look at how you map ecosystem services on the landscape and how you can model them and then model the economic value. So if you think about it, for flood protection, think about the provisioning area of flood protection and the provisioning assets. Traditionally, we've just looked at levees, that's it, or dams. But now you can say, well, there's forests, there's wetlands, there are all these other things, and we can start calculating, get a water balance of what provides that flood protection. Well, that's great because that gives us a balance of how much to invest. And if you use those tools of mapping and modeling, then you can also look at the beneficiaries, who benefits. And you can look at those who may damage that service, and then you can set up a funding mechanism. And so we have more powerful tools than even cost-benefit for looking at these things.
What are some of the issues around funding to protect ecosystem services?
Well, if you think about it, it was 100 years ago in 1912, they had the Bread and Roses strike, and women protested for a raise of 2 cents an hour in Lawrence, Massachusetts, from 16 to 18 cents. And out of this, what we call the progressive movement 100 years ago, we got our utilities that we have today. We got a lot of tax districts. We were a nation of dirt tracks, so we got robust funding mechanisms for roads, city, county, state level. Well, now when you think about ecosystem services, we want to think about how to fund these. And Costa Rica is probably a country leading this work, and we've helped them with that. We've been down there a few times on projects. Costa Rica went to only 21% forested, and now it expanded to 42% forested because they realized they were running out of drinking water. They didn't have tap water for the full part of the day in the capital and other places. They were having greater flooding. They were having landslides because of deforestation. So they put a funding mechanism. They taxed gasoline. They taxed a little bit of water. And then they give a payment back for forest owners for the forest cover. And forest owners decided, wow, this is better, actually, than having a bunch of cows out here. And so reforestation took place. Drinking water came back. Flood protection was reduced. And it has 80% popularity in Costa Rica. So when we think about it, we need some taxing structures to invest in our natural capital. Right now, we have a system for building roads. We have a system for building stormwater systems. We have no system for actually systematically funding the natural capital, which is a better investment than many of those investments because it doesn't fall apart. So we've suggested this water investment district as a structure that can kind of measure the value of both built capital in a watershed and natural capital and reinvest in that which provides us the greatest set of benefits across flooding, drinking water, salmon restoration, etc.
You mentioned Costa Rica. Would you give another example of valuation of ecosystem services being used internationally?
Sure. There are quite a few. In China, for example, they did an analysis in Beijing of the forested area around Beijing, and it was being encroached on by very wealthy houses, people chopping down all the trees, building their big kind of mansion up there and such. And they did a valuation of ecosystem services, and it was very interesting. They looked at drinking water provisioning. It's a dry city during the summer. You don't want to run out of water. Slide protection and a variety of others. But amazingly, what came out way on top was recreation. And because of that, they created a green belt, a huge green belt around Beijing. And one of the professors there, Professor Gaudi, said to me, the recreation analysis showed that if we don't have recreation, we're going to have 19 million crazy people because they don't have a place to go and recreate. And so they put a ban on any expansion of housing and development up into those areas. And here in the Northwest, you know, it's been very exciting. We've got some real leaders here, right in our own community, like Mayor Joan McGilton in Burien, who has really been a strong supporter of this work. And she really has said, look, we need to look at flood protection, stormwater, et cetera, all together, even recreation. This is how we make livable communities. And I'm very proud of some of our local folks. They're really leading the way. Doug Osterman from Ryanine, he's the coordinator for King County and Ryanine. And he's been an absolute leader in this. And we've had some published articles in academic journals just from what's been happening here right in our own backyard.
Would you comment generally on the use of economic incentives and make the case for the use of economic incentives compared to other approaches to environmental protection?
I think, Diane, you know, if you look at the environment, we came out of wilderness as humans, and I think there was a period of tremendous importance where the U.S. led the world in establishing the first national parks. Incredible! Now there are national parks around the world. We've saved some of our greatest gems. Then there was a second phase, I'd say, in the environmental movement where we said we have to have environmental legislation. We need a Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, Endangered Species Act. These things are important for our economy, too, because if you poison the water and rivers can light up on fire, you're not going to have a successful economy and you're going to have a lot of sick people. So legislation was the way. And then we had a regulatory period where we said, OK, we're going to regulate companies, etc. But now I think there's a phase which is equally enormous and equally important to really establishing, just like national parks. And it's saying, and we've always had some incentives coming along with the environment, but now we can have stronger incentives. For instance, if you looked at hurricane protection in Louisiana, an acre of land is worth like $500, and yet the hurricane protection value alone is worth maybe $10,000 per year for the buffering value. It's cheaper than building levees. So what if we set out a hurricane protection district? And those folks in New Orleans paid, but instead of insurance, which just spreads risk and doesn't actually provide any benefit of hurricane protection, this money was used to restore the wetlands. And you paid some landowners out there to help restore and open up these diversions and such. Then you get a funding mechanism which makes the city more safe, and you have an economy which can extend out again to that extent of that delta. Otherwise, with a shrinking delta, there's nowhere to go but economic decline. And so today, it's an exciting time because I think thinking in these terms, it's going to make our economy stronger. It's going to increase jobs. It's going to consolidate industry. For instance, I think that perhaps the greatest threat to Boeing is not Airbus. It might be flooding. Trees are important for Boeing, and Boeing actually recognizes that. They were one of the great supporters here in Ryan 9 of saying we need to look at ecosystem services.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
The message I'd like to leave them with is that economies transform. They don't just change or grow. They actually transform. And our economy is transformed. And the more we include the benefits of natural systems, the more efficient our economy actually is, the better flood protection we get. And these are the things that are increasingly we're short of and are more valuable. We kind of have a lot of roads and plastic toys. We're abundant with those things these days, but we're short of climate stability. We're short of flood protection. We're drinking water is under threat. Salmon are short. So we need to invest in these goods and services. And in fact, that provides greater jobs and we get a bigger rate of return out of it.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much, Diane.
You have just been listening to David Badker, Chief Economist and Executive Director of Earth Economics, and co-author with John DeGraff of the book What's the Economy For Anyway? For more information, check on the web at www.eartheconomics.org. Again, that's eartheconomics.org. The Sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on podcasting, and scroll down to Mind Over Matters sustainability segment. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and kexp.org.